Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
You gotta love the National Review. For those who don't know what the National Review is, it's a conservative publication. I think it was founded by William F. Buckley. I just saw an interesting documentary about Buckley and his rivalry with Gore Vidal. It's, I think, still on Netflix, too. It's called The Best of Enemies. Christopher Hitchens is one of the voices that's featured. He's interviewed to talk about these two quote-unquote intellectuals. You know, I didn't know much about Gore Vidal until after I became an atheist, and I began to read some of his writings and see his perspectives and became sort of an admirer, really. I mean, where when I was growing up, William F. Buckley, the conservative, he was the one who was always sort of the, I don't know, he was the guy on the high mountain. He was the wise old man sort of thing. My parents used to watch Firing Line and used to watch him debate quite a bit. And he had that very distinct William F. Buckley way of speaking, you say. And he would talk about things like immigration and taxation, and the way he would sort of roll it off his tongue, it just sounded so very important, you know. And of course, when you look at it all in hindsight, you realize how incredibly misguided the guy actually was on a huge number of issues. Well, the National Review decided it was going to publish an article about the new atheists. Oh, this ought to be good. Now, we just did a show recently about the misunderstandings in regard to what an atheist is, what an atheist thinks, as if all atheists are cut from the same cloth, they all come out of the same cookie cutter, they're all essentially the same people. And the commentary comes out from people who quite often know few or no atheists in their own life. And they just stand over there across the fence. Oh, these atheists, you see, these atheists, they just, they all hate God, and they're all permissive, promiscuous, carnal people who like to bend themselves into all kinds of sexual positions and then excuse it, you know, because we're all monkeys and they're all just sad, sad people who just, they're going to die and rot. And so they just, you know, this is just the worst kind of existence imaginable. Blah, 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 blah. Well, William F. Buckley is dead, but his spirit lives on in the form of the National Review. Allow me to read the article for you and then provide comments, if I may. The article published by Elliot Kaufman, July the 28th, 2017. Whatever happened to the new atheists? Now, the title alone gets my blood boiling. But only because I'm an angry atheist, apparently, you see. The article says, organized religion's shallowest critics made the mistake of blasting Islam along with Christianity, and the left, capital L, and the left crucified them for it. On Friday, it became official. The new atheists are no longer welcome on the left. Battered, condemned, and disinvited, these godless and once favored public intellectuals, and they have public intellectuals in quotes, are now homeless, spurned by their erstwhile progressive allies. Richard Dawkins, the famously skeptical evolutionary biologist, was the last shoe to drop. He was disinvited from a speaking engagement at Berkeley because his comments about Islam had, quote, offended and hurt so many people, according to the event's organizers. Dawkins is in good company. His new atheist compatriots, Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris, had already been expelled from the party. In both cases, insufficient deference to Islam was the proximate cause. Hitchens remained a committed socialist, but felt a war on Islamic terror and autocracy was needed. For this, he was denounced as a neocon. Harris is a liberal, straight and true, but drew the ire of Reza Aslan for refusing to accept Islam from his broad critique of religion. Islam is not a religion of peace, Harris often says. In fact, he thinks it's just the opposite. For that, everyone from Glenn Greenwald to Ben Affleck has cast him as an Islamophobe and a bigot. That means three of the much-acclaimed Four Horsemen of New Atheism have been turfed from the left for extending their critique of religion to Islam. The fourth is Daniel Dennett, who also criticizes Islam. The only actual philosopher of the bunch, he's far too boring and ponderous to be noticed, let alone denounced by anyone. In his place, one can add Bill Maher, a popularizer of New Atheism who's been barred from Berkeley over criticism of Islam. One by one, these men have been excommunicated from the left. And again, it's left with a capital L. What has happened? The National Review asks. Why did the left delight in seeing these men ignorantly mock and vilify Christians, but denounce them when they treated Islam the exact same way? Confirmation bias deserves at least part of the blame. The New Atheists have long harbored an irrational fear of Christianity. I'm sorry, I'm choking on these words. I want to get through this and then we're going to come back. I know you're frustrated. We're going to come back. The New Atheists have long harbored an irrational fear of Christianity, but Christophobia doesn't worry the left. Combating Islamophobia, however, is a progressive priority, so it's noticed and addressed when it strikes. However, the argument that the liberal obsession with Islamophobia stems from a healthy regard for the status of minorities only goes so far. As Michael Walzer, the socialist intellectual, has written in Dissent, quote, I frequently come across leftists who are more concerned with avoiding accusations of Islamophobia than they are with condemning Islamist zealotry. There's a reason, after all, why many Democrats stubbornly and proudly refuse to say the word Islamic terrorism, preferring to speak of generalized extremism. But these same people who insist that evil men have perverted Islam are usually the first to falsely bring up Timothy McVeigh as an example of a Christian terrorist. They present Christianity as a reflection of the actions of its evildoers and even those who disclaim the faith. But the actions of Orthodox Islamic believers, the left suddenly maintains, are no reflection on the tenets of the peaceful Islamic faith. Farther left, the defense of Islam becomes a defense of Islamic radicalism and intolerance. Slavoj Žižek, I hope I'm saying that name right, sees in Islamism the rage of the victims of capitalist globalization. Judith Butler insists that understanding Hamas and Hezbollah as social movements that are progressive, that are on the left, that are part of a global left, is extremely important. What the hell are they talking about? Almost done. In fact, they join a long line of left-wing apologists for murderous anti-Western regimes. You know what? I'm just going to link this sucker and you can read the rest of it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like, now, there must be another 15 paragraphs. I can't take it. I can't take it. You can go back and read it for yourself. First of all, what's the left with a capital L? What is that? Somebody show me the boundaries and hard definition of progressive or progressivism. Show me that. Why in the world are we quoting Reza Aslan? Why are we doing that? I just did an interview with Mohammed Syed and Sarah Hayter of Ex-Muslims of North America, and they revealed that people in Islamic countries don't even think he's legitimate. I mean, they're not even listening to Reza Aslan. He's just a thing in the West among the Ben Affleck crowd. And do we really think that there's a huge horde of people who are following the lead of Ben Affleck? I'm not denying that there are Islam apologists out there, and there are people out there so afraid of being labeled a bigot or a racist or whatever, that they are walking on these eggshells around Islam when they should be harshly criticizing and condemning Islamic theology and ideology. I mean, these are bad ideas. It's a debunked mythology, an often violent mythology. And unlike Christianity in the 21st century, largely unlike Christianity in the 21st century, Islam, radical Islam, is still acting out the violence of its own scriptures. Yes, it's a political machine, but it's also a religious one. We don't have to separate the religion of Islam from the politics of Islamic theocracies and the violence they carry out in Islam's name, in the name of Muhammad, in the name of Allah. And there are a great many people on the left. In fact, I'm surrounded by people who are liberal, who are harsh critics of Islam. They're not standing around in deference because they're terrified of being called racist or bigoted. And while there are some people within the atheist movement or movements who have seen Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett as sort of falling out of favor, they're to them yesterday's news, or maybe they don't even like many of the words that are coming out of their mouth. The idea that they're completely irrelevant and they've been cast off by the whole of the left, to me, makes no sense. The people who think Dan Dennett is boring, what'd they say? The only philosopher of the bunch, but he's far too boring and ponderous to be noticed, let alone denounced by anyone. Anyone else think Daniel Dennett is actually a really interesting guy? I mean, he's an interesting guy, and he's a great author. He's got some amazing speeches out there. I saw a TED Talk just recently. It's a few years old, but I mean, it was really quite compelling. Daniel Dennett is a great storyteller, a great communicator, a great educator. Well, it comes to our attention that this article in the National Review, written by Elliot Kaufman, Elliot Kaufman is an intern. He's not even on staff, really on staff at the National Review. They had an intern write this think piece, this commentary about new atheism. Now, what the hell is new atheism? I posted this online and it got picked up and passed around. I said this, new atheist is a ridiculous term, subjectively tossed out as a pejorative by many who insist on declaring that Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, etc. represent something new, the criticisms of religion. Whoa, right? And that the specific naming of Islam by white bread Westerners constitutes some kind of privilege-based profiling. There aren't any new atheists. There aren't. There are atheists, some prominent, some flawed, many admirable and courageous, dodging the trash thrown down at them from the cheap seats inside a movement of wildly diverse and often loud opinions. New atheism is framed by the National Review and others as a kind of a cultural fad, a wave. It's like a Beatlemania of non-belief that will eventually wash away like so many other fads. And future generations will look back and chuckle and groan at what new atheism was and what it wasn't. And the tragic people, the tragic elements in this movement who are waving the banner of the left, they'll continue to buy into this lie that Richard Dawkins' criticisms of Islam are bigoted. Those people exist, and they do exist within the movement. They're not the whole of the left, and they're not the whole of the atheist movement that I know, and trust me, I'm pretty wired in. Sam Harris's conversations about religion and race, about Islam, those are supposed to be an indictment of his character and his positions as a whole, but I find the whole of his work meritorious. He's not perfect. There are some things I wish he had said and done differently over the course of his career, but overall, do we really see him as poison in the well? What is up with all these self-appointed whistleblowers who are puffing themselves up by declaring that the whole of liberalism and the whole of the left with a capital L and the atheist movement is some kind of racist, supremacist, bigoted cult? No, new atheism with a capital N and a capital A. New atheism. Hey, don't hurt yourself with all that patting yourself on the back. But already I can hear them mashing at their keyboards and they're saying, well, Seth is saying that these people should be above criticism. I mean, we should never call out problems in our own movement or problems within the left. And they should be totally insulated because they're left. In fact, we should treat them with absolute deference. Did I say that? Did I imply that? Warts and all, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Dan Dennett, and the late Christopher Hitchens have done more. They have done more to advance the conversations and the cause of a superstition-free world, a woo-free world, and, quite honestly, humanistic ideas than thousands of these armchair quarterback detractors all combined. And while people shouldn't ever be immune from analysis and criticism, we should also treat them fairly, don't you think? We should treat them with, if you'll pardon the expression, good faith, as they continue their fight against superstition from the front lines, from the hard and often unforgiving turf of the playing field. How many of the people who are throwing stones at them are not involved in any way in these discussions? It blows my mind. It's easier to curse the light than illuminate the darkness. While I'm not saying that these people are immune from criticism, I am saying stop giving them shit because they're white. Stop giving them shit because they're guys. And stop declaring that simply because they didn't approach a specific topic the way you would have approached a specific topic, or because occasionally they said something untoward or unfortunate on Twitter or elsewhere, which is, I think, a hugely clumsy forum for the promotion and challenging of ideas, stop declaring that their decades of work are all then null and void because of something that you did not like or agree with about this person. It's just unfair. Do I have a bias about it? It's possible. You know, I look at these people who were saying Richard Dawkins is irrelevant. Well, the big portrait in regard to activism constitutes a whole lot more than any three or four people. I mean, I'll give you that. The idea that people like to talk about the four horsemen, we don't really do that anymore. In fact, the only people I really see doing it, really, are people who are non-atheist or non-liberal. People who were like the intern at the National Review, right? They just latch on to the few names they have heard of, the people I brush elbows with and the people that I am involved in conversations with, the people that I join hands in activism with. These are not the four horsemen. I'm surrounded by activists who are not the quote-unquote big four. Skepticism of religion and the promotion of humanistic ideas is far more than the speeches, the writings, the voices, the persons of Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, Dan Hill Dennett, far beyond. And those who continue to insist that there's only four guys who represent everybody in the movement reveal their own ignorance about the movement. And this myth about new atheism, the new atheists, beyond a subjectively chosen date on a calendar, you can't define what a new atheist is. Go back in time. Read the works of George Bernard Shaw, Robert Greene Ingersoll, Mark Twain, for Pete's sake, Bertrand Russell. Harsh criticisms of religion. And if you were to take any one of those sentences and you were to take out the word religion and put in the word Islam, you could pretty much splice it into most of the conversations that many of these activists are having today, and they would be called new atheists and possibly Islamophobe. What about this claim inside the article that new atheists have an irrational fear of Christianity? Christophobes, which again plays into the persecution narrative so often pitched by Christianity. If you are a good Christian, you must be persecuted in the name of Jesus Christ. This is part of what good Christians do. You got to be shitting me. Do you honestly think that I, as a guy who spent 30 years in the faith, disagree with Christianity and criticize Christianity because I have an irrational fear of Christianity? Even if we stuck to the quote-unquote four horsemen, you honestly think that Richard Dawkins has a fear of Christianity in any way? The late Christopher Hitchens, he wasn't scared of Christianity in the slightest. Daniel Dennett, bravely speaking out against it. Sam Harris, the same. An irrational fear of Christianity? Who exactly are they talking about? And is it appropriate for essentially an apologist for a religion that talks about, that promotes, that sells the irrational as truth with a capital T, condemns other people for their irrationality? Yeah, we hold to the idea that a universe was created by a divine wizard, and he created this one rock over here in the middle of the Milky Way, and then a dirt man and a rib woman, and then there was a talking animal, and then he flooded the whole planet. But some penguins and anacondas and giant pandas and velociraptors all got on a big floating zoo, and they floated around for a year before eight people committed incest to repopulate the entire planet, creating 5,000 ethnic groups in less than 4,000 years. But everybody remained essentially in a state of displeasing God, so from time to time he declared war, had his armies declare war, and had people slaughtered. There were men slaughtered, and then there were women, nursing women, who were slaughtered. Their unborn children were slaughtered. The animal, the livestock were all slaughtered. They burned the villages. They just slaughtered everything. And then God decides that his next solution for saving humanity from the hell that he himself created would be to impregnate an unwed teenager with himself for the purpose of ritual sacrifice 1,400 years before the invention of the printing press, so that this could be anonymously documented by people who also told us to believe that donkeys could argue with you, that people lived to be 1,000, and that the earth had corners. You're telling the critics of Christianity that we're the irrational ones. It just blows my mind. If you'll indulge me, I had addressed the idea of new atheism. This is a while back, I guess a couple of years ago. It was a book written by C.J. Werlumen. Now, C.J. was an up-and-comer in the atheist movement and a firebrand critic of religion. In fact, one of his books was called God Hates You, Hate Him Back. And he was just in religion's face. CJ found himself in hot water. He found himself in the spotlight after it came to light that many of his writings were apparently lifted, plagiarized from other sources, unsourced. So he comes forward with explanations and quote-unquote apologies that aren't really apologies. Some of the people who are criticizing and exposing him are atheist activists, and it was around this time we began to see a shift. It could be coincidental, it could be directly related, but we saw a shift in his criticisms of atheists and atheist activism. They were now the other. They were now the enemy. They were now the new atheists. And he went and wrote a book called The New Atheist Threat: The Dangerous Rise of Secular Extremists. Shortly after that, I published a 4,500-word review of The New Atheist Threat. And I want to go back and actually review and read for you some of the content in that article, because I think it relates to many of the criticisms about the quote-unquote new atheist today, criticisms doled out by people far beyond C.J. Werlemann. It's a hate group, these new atheists. They climbed to the top of the mountain so they could beat their own chest before flinging themselves off into oblivion in front of the whole world. New atheism. They're not interested in human beings. They're not really all that interested in human rights. They can't understand the difference between ideologies and those who hold them. They don't know the difference between religions and those who practice them. They're interested only in promoting hate and bad ideas. They are religious about new atheism. This is the angle that we hear, built on a subjectively defined term and happily latched onto by people like C.J. Werlemann. And again, my review of his book and the excerpts I'm reading here relate to many of the criticisms, hell, not criticisms, the misrepresentations of prominent atheists and atheist activism here in the 21st century. Before the very first chapter of The New Atheist Threat, we see a dedication to the three people killed by a madman in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The shooter, Craig Hicks, 46, was a self-professed atheist whose social media settings were filled with anti-religion statements. On January 27, 2015, Hicks's Facebook page bore a meme which said, "People say there's nothing that can solve the Middle East problem. I saw there is something. Atheism." Within a month, Hicks had become a murderer of Muslims, and the eager media lapped up early charges that this hate crime was fueled by godlessness, an atheist rogue operating without the moral compass, which certainly must come from above. Of course, the complex causes and motives of murderers often don't fit easily into a soundbite. And even now, the grieving survivors can only guess about the full spectrum of reasons why Hicks ultimately decided to shatter their lives with a handgun. Was it hatred born of ignorance, brainwashing, or severe mental illness? What thousand steps led to the Chapel Hill doorstep? And what clues remained hidden behind the merciless eyes of the assassin? As people who promote goodness and justice, we continue to seek the answers. No matter the conclusion, it was an individual act carried out by an individual man. C.J. Werlemann, however, is quick to link Craig Hicks and his murderous rage with new atheism, declaring of Hicks, quote, "He lists Richard Dawkins' God Delusion as one of his favorite books." So before we've even reached chapter one, readers are asked to step onto the first rung of a guilt-by-association ladder, a ladder that leads downward toward CJ's ultimate destination, the alignment of new atheists with the worst of humanity. A killer had on his shelf a Dawkins book, a second smoking gun. Alert the FBI Hate Crimes Division. The term new atheism is broadly and nebulously defined in the introduction, but CJ essentially describes an Islamophobic club of largely affluent white guys who've built a personality cult and generous book sales upon a post-9/11 fear culture. Certainly, there are notes of this chord that might ring true. September the 11th, 2001, put radical Islamism on the American radar for good and for ill. And it galvanized many who'd previously criticized sacred religious belief only in the shadows. The Four Horsemen became a thing, their celebrity amplifying both strengths and flaws. And the internet continued to feed a high-speed stream of heresy into the web browsers and smartphones, of a public increasingly intolerant of religious fundamentalism, especially Islamic fundamentalism. Everyday Americans ultimately, finally, began to feel the rising radical Islamic tide. So fortunately and unfortunately, they started talking about Muslims. Certainly, the United States can be prone to ignorance and irrational fears in regard to Islam and Muslims, just as it does with regard to atheists. But C.J. Werlemann is so alarmingly content to equate the terms anti-religion and anti-religious that he cheats necessary understanding about the various shades of anti-religious positions and people. And as he did with Craig Hicks, C.J. professes to crawl inside the minds of Dawkins, Harris, Hitchens, etc. to reveal, for those of us who do not yet possess clairvoyant abilities, the seething hatred lurking within. In his eagerness to reveal the cauldron of New Atheist prejudice, he declares in Chapter 5 that New Atheists echo the Ku Klux Klan. As, quote, they not only espouse white supremacy, but they also speak in a language that is every bit as crude and racist as fascist neo-Nazi movements. Welcome to the new atheist threat. A wide, broad, reckless barrage of generalities. And as the clever saying goes, all generalities are false. In regard to the new atheist, and we're still just in the introduction of the book here, they do this, they do that. They reduce all 1.6 billion Muslims to the brutality of ISIS. They are anti-intellectual. They engage in double standards. They engage in gross generalizations. Of course, by using inflammatory charges about a few figureheads to describe an ill-defined group, C.J. Werlemann is himself engaging in gross generalizations. If we stick with his reference to the Wikipedia definition of new atheism, which is a social and political movement that advocates the view religion should not simply be tolerated but should be confronted and criticized, we're still dealing with a huge swath of varying people and perceptions on every tier of the societal and ideological chain, and we're being force-fed the charge that all who are passionately against religious dogma are also passionately against religious people. C.J. Werlemann attempts to parallel a desire to destroy bad ideas with a desire to destroy those who hold them, especially in relation to Islam. There is little room in his argument for Robert Greene Ingersoll's famously expressed notion that the more false we destroy, the more room we make for the true. There's little room in his new atheist outline for those who fight unsubstantiated and often damaging religious doctrines and edicts, not because they hate people, but because they love people, genuinely care about the issues, and ache to see the indoctrinated, the misled, the uneducated, and the oppressed liberated from dogma. It's unfathomable to him that Dawkins and Hitchens and Harris have operated with any genuine compassion and goodwill for believers, even Muslims. After all, they're anti-theists. As I watch C.J. Werlemann's book cast a small, unwieldy net into a vast, skeptical sea, I'm dubious that he's interviewed the whole of 21st century anti-theists, and that again makes the whole they thing very problematic. And I was slack-jawed at his October 5th, 2015 tweet, which said, "There are tens of millions of new atheists scarier than Dick Cheney." And he included the hashtag Harris. For Sam Harris. The latest Pew Research numbers show that declared atheists make up only about 3.1% of the U.S. population. That's less than 10 million total, many of whom are not activists in any meaningful way. Okay? So even if we assume global figures, from where is CJ's tens of millions number derived? And I have to make a note here that the heavy hand of hyperbole almost always backfires. Exaggeration reveals to the audience there are good reasons to distrust the source. There's so many people just shrug and they move on because they don't want to get on board a vehicle they've already deemed to be unreliable. It's true, atheism is not immune to zealotry, it's not immune to toxicity, but as somebody who is intimately involved with the atheist movement and has been involved for years, I can quickly declare that my experiences with even the most vehement opponents of religion have, except for the occasional anomaly, have largely revealed balanced, compassionate people who have fires in their bellies and goodwill in their hearts. In our interactions, my fellow atheist activists don't condemn Christianity because they hate Christians. They don't condemn Scientology because they hate Scientologists. They don't condemn Islam because they hate Muslims. They condemn blind faith, the brainwashing of the young and the vulnerable, the anti-science claims of apologists, the theocrats attempting to co-opt a secular government, religious bigotry and misogyny, religiously motivated violence, and the threats of torment for the planet's billions of non-believers. Many care about the issues because they just care about people. They care because facts matter. They care because we're all stuck here on the same rock in the cosmos. We all share the same planet. We are all the same humanity. The new atheist threat has little space on the platform to highlight the compassionate 21st century religion critic. The opportunity to examine the nuanced, the complex, the hugely broad range of personalities and backgrounds and styles and perceptions, motivations and tactics, all that is sacrificed in favor of hyperbole and all-or-nothing overstatement. Hard lines are drawn, good or evil, best or worst, all or nothing. CJ declares defiantly, quote, "New atheism is the belief religion is the root of most or all of the world's problems. And in the mind of the new atheist, all religious believers are definitely backwards, potentially violent, and a threat to civil society." Where the hell did he get that information? Again, using the word all. Good luck sourcing that one. I mean, I'm out there shaking the trees. I don't see my fellow atheist activists, even the firebrands, even the harshest anti-theists. I don't see these people declaring the abolition of religious belief would automatically result in some kind of happy, clappy Xanadu of perfection and peace and bliss and harmony and unity and progress, kind of a kumbaya planet Earth. What C.J. Werleman called in his book, a psychosis of utopian dreams. Anybody out there you know pitching that? Religion goes away and everything becomes perfect? I have come across a few random non-believers and a handful of lower-tier social media sites that do have simplistic notions of a peaceful world without religion, but I've never heard any frontline activists claim that in the absence of superstition, flawed and often irrational and occasionally corrupt human beings would stop being flawed, often irrational, and occasionally corrupt human beings. Never heard that. Never heard that we wouldn't have to continue to deal with the bigoted and the tribalistic, the opportunistic, the hateful and destructive shades of the human condition, that the abolition of religion would somehow be our golden ticket to the chocolate factory, that people would suddenly stop being people. Never made that claim. I haven't heard that claim among the activists that I meet in the atheist movement all across the country. And for the record, I have never heard Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, etc. predict such an airbrushed secular utopia either. Never heard it. I have heard, and occasionally myself made, plenty of statements declaring that a science-based world, a superstition-free world, would be a much better world. And that seems like common sense, doesn't it? The absence of magical thinking would allow us to sort of avoid all these distractions and pursue reality-based solutions on a planet free of religiously imposed guilt and shame and bigotry, misinformation. And yet there is no room for this kind of color in many of these arguments against the new atheists. The ones who say that new atheists are all white supremacists, they're all racists, they're all bigots. They're part of a hate cult. As I continue to refer to this article because I think it remains relevant to the discussions we're having even today, it's strange to see Werleman, the author of God Hates You, Hate Him Back, taking an advocacy position in regard to superstitious beliefs, declaring, quote, "Religion means so many different things to so many different people, and that religion can inspire good people to do good things. Distancing himself from his own biting tone from previous years in Chapter 4, he defends those who have found inspiration through religion. Now, there's no question that many charitable, good, loving, and worthy efforts are motivated by belief, both rational belief and irrational belief. I don't think there's any question about that. But many of the harshest critics of religion simply want the distraction of magical thinking removed from an obviously humanistic endeavor. And the whole idea is that with eyes focused on each other instead of on an empty sky, and without all these religiously imposed agendas to save souls first, we as human beings can more clearly concentrate on the tasks at hand. Human beings are doing all the work anyway. We are doing all the heavy lifting anyway. This is not a hateful proposition. It's not hateful to say, as Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris have said, that Islamist teachings are not supported by the evidence and they often excuse and encourage destructive behavior. That's not hateful. It's not hateful to declare that the burqa is often not worn by choice, but instead can function as a kind of muzzle, an identity-muting prison that is imposed by primitive, male-dominated theocracies. It's not hateful to condemn the crimson-stained verses of the Quran right alongside the crimson-stained verses of the Christian Old Testament, especially as we constantly see literal Quranic justice meted out by zealots who have bombs and guns and machetes. And it's not hateful to declare that it's morally reprehensible to bathe in the arterial spray of the hostage that you just beheaded. It's not hateful, it's not bigoted, it's not phobic, it's certainly not racist. You and I are in the arena of ideas, right? And at least for now, right here in the 21st century, radical Islam wins the prize for just sheer, blood-drunk, theocratic carnage. How much time did C.J. Werleman spend in his book focusing on the murderous Islamic radical, the jihadist, the executioner by knife, by sword, by rope, bullet, water, stone, fire? Not much at all. Chapter after chapter, he is obsessed with the West and its responsibility for creating all this mess, lamenting that it's the new atheists who are ignoring the sins of their own country. I was talking to Faisal Saeed Al-Muttar about this. You know, did the West really create ISIS? Are we responsible for all the bombings and the child murder and the beheadings and the rape rooms and all of that? And of course, Faisal was wisely bringing up a long human history of oppressed cultures who did not go out and suicide bomb children and who did not go out and gleefully behead their captives. Now, here's where things get sticky. C.J. Werleman's charge that the U.S. is at least partially culpable for fueling the engine of Islamic radicalism does have an element of truth to it. The corrupt and or misguided political endeavors, military posturing, big money, political maneuvering, they do deserve the white hot light of scrutiny, especially with the rise of ISIS in the wake of our blunders in Iraq. And I don't think anybody can look at the Iraqi wars and not realize that we screwed up. We, as the United States, should look in the mirror, and we should see the damage wrought by misguided wars, by greed, by crime, corruption, blind nationalism, our own foreign policy ineptitude. And we should call out high-profile figures when their misstatements and their missteps cause all this damage. But a proper vetting of Western responsibility does not excuse or validate falsifiable and falsified Islamic teachings, the Islamic war cries of jihad, the frothing and murderous rage of thin-skinned fanatics who will kill you over a cartoon, the oppression of human beings, and the eye on global dominance that's so often extolled by entities who are lauding and praising Islam. It doesn't require the charge that the U.S. is little more than an imperialist bully constantly creating military threats out of whole cloth so those crises can serve an Illuminati-like conspiracy of self-interest. This is a caricature claim. It just suffocates under its own overstated weight. Why couldn't we? I mean, hell, why shouldn't we be able to examine so many of the hugely wrong-headed U.S. interventions without reducing the United States to some kind of a hissing Hannibal Lecter, especially in the shadow of a genuine, obvious, extolled, radical declaration of ideological and physical war by radical Islamists. "We made them" does carry some weight until it doesn't. And at some point, we have to look at the knife at the throat of the helpless hostage under the shadow of radical Islam and declare that it's the radical, not us, not the West, not Westerners, not new atheism. It's the radical that ultimately wields the weapon. Barbarism in the name of Allah existed long before the United States was even established. Unoppressed recruits are subscribing to radical Islam well outside of any Western influence. All around the world they're signing up. It's not our fault. And for the record, history is loaded with oppressed people who did not metamorphosize into blood-drunk monsters who were bent on martyrdom or global conquest. Now, to excuse or at least ignore these minute-by-minute acts of horror while blanket blaming the United States and demonizing those who publicly condemn inhumane deeds, which, by the way, Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins and so many other atheist activists do, that's simply wrong. To blame them is simply wrong. It is not news that peace-loving Muslims and apostates are often the ones, quite frankly, usually the ones who are crushed by the boot of radicalism. Well, it may be news to some, especially here in the U.S., but not among the atheist activists I know. I've recently interviewed Armin Navabi and Mohammed Sayed and Sarah Hader and Faisal Saeed Al-Muttar. They highlighted the challenges of the oppressed in many Muslim nations and cultures. Atheist activist Miriam Namazi and her team are broadcasting a political social television show into Iran via satellite. Illegally, by the way, providing a conduit of free thought programming and human rights advocacy that's accessible to the approximately 40-60% of Iranian citizens who happen to have satellite dishes. Again, it is oppressed Muslims who constitute the bulk of the target audience, because it is oppressed Muslims that these atheist activists are aching to help. Mainstream atheist activists understand the difference between the radical and the peaceful, the ideology and the people, the color of one's actions and the color of one's skin. Where's the reflection of this in the criticisms of quote-unquote new atheists? It is also intellectually dishonest to tar and feather popular public figures with the most bigoted and hateful tweets and posts and comments that are tossed onto their pages by third parties, by the internet's lowest common denominators. There was one commenter I'd use as an example. He logs onto a prominent atheist page, and in the comments section, he was responding to an article about 700 dead Muslims in an attack, and his response was, "Who gives a fuck? They're idiots." Now, is it fair to make the host of that particular page, whichever page it is, guilty by association, guilty of the same hate that the commenter is guilty of? Is it fair to screenshot that comment and then align it and connect it and associate it with the character of the person who happened to host the page on which the rogue comment was posted? I see this quite a bit. You'll see these quote-unquote critics of new atheism, and they'll go out and troll around. It won't take long to find some of the worst comments in relation to atheist or Islamist or whatever, and they'll just sort of harvest those and then use them as examples in their criticisms of new atheism. C.J. Werleman did this very thing after several people were killed during their annual pilgrimage to Mecca. There were some people on the internet, and you'll find them, who were saying it's God's will and good riddance, and I hit the like button over and over. I think it's funny. C.J. Werleman screenshots these tweets and then links it to Miriam Namazi, and says new atheists are celebrating Muslim deaths during Hajj. Do you honestly think that Miriam Namazi celebrated the Muslim deaths? Do you think Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett? Can you think of anybody in the atheist movement in the 21st century who was high-fiving someone else because Muslims were horribly killed on their pilgrimage to Mecca? This is not how credibility or lack of it is determined. October 8th, 2015, CJ declared that Sam Harris and Majid Nawaz have one audience, racists. What? Now, I follow Sam Harris's page. I've read Harris's An Atheist Manifesto on the radio a few years ago. I enjoyed his book, Letter to a Christian Nation, and I've enjoyed many of his speeches and debates online. How am I supposed to receive this charge of racism by association? I'm somehow a racist because I am a member of the audience? And what kind of critical thinker makes statements like this? What's up with all this cult talk? It would be dishonest for me to declare that for any public figure that a cult of personality can't develop. Celebrity on most levels can be intoxicating. It's not uncommon for people who connect with famous names to develop kind of an airbrushed picture, and they treat them with adulation and awe and many times with deference. This happens from time to time. There's an article by a guy named Richard Brown called The Bizarre and Costly Cult of Richard Dawkins, and it does flirt with a very real phenomenon and a legitimate challenge of hero worship. It can happen. You know, in my early apostasy, Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, was hugely instrumental. I felt an admiration and connection to this guy. He was kind of a secular star, and I can see how somebody might have that adulation in their minds. But CJ and the New Atheist Threat don't view Richard Dawkins' fan base with any complexity at all. The book just shouts cult and cult members, and it reduces this vast, diverse, global audience of readers and viewers and fans to a frothing, drooling flock of sheep. They're just blind minions who are religiously swooning at the altar of Dawkins, desperate for the gaze of his eye or the graze of his hand. Religious apostates have just traded one god for another, right? They've surrendered their own minds and their hearts to the atheist god. You have got to be shitting me. A more fair perspective, a more considered eye, would know that Richard Dawkins can't post a syllable. He can't post anything without meeting a cacophony of scrutiny and skepticism and even indignation. Even people like me who have a genuine admiration for the decades of contributions he has made to scientific literacy and atheist activism are still apt to disagree and loudly when appropriate. And we often see these clashes play out in full living color. They can in some cases be productive, as long as they don't declare the other party some kind of mustache-twirling cartoon. Richard Dawkins can be frustrating. I think his Twitter feed is occasionally frustrating. He's trying to handle specific, complex ideas in 140 characters, and he, in my opinion, does not always do it well. But with Dawkins, you're not talking about some empty suit. We're talking about a guy, an educator, a scientist, an activist, whose work spans almost half a century. His work has impacted and dramatically changed lives. And I hear these stories everywhere I go. Richard Dawkins, the God delusion. Richard Dawkins, the selfish gene. Richard Dawkins spoke at this event. Richard Dawkins was one of the people who encouraged me to be more critical about the religion I once held to be true. Now, acknowledging that does not make Dawkins a cult leader, and it doesn't make me a sheep. Doesn't make you a sheep. And this is the case with so many other people who deserve better than to be labeled cultish minions, right? Admiration for someone, appreciation for someone's work, that's not the same as blind allegiance. Probably one of the biggest challenges for me is that many of these charges and claims and rants about the new atheists are giving a big, wet, sloppy kiss to the hordes of apologists and woo defenders like the intern at the National Review, who declare that atheist activism itself is just toxic and hateful and bigoted, or worse yet, just another religion. It is a tragedy. It's tragic to see a few icons within the atheist movement all of a sudden decide it's fashionable to call it new atheism, and then stand over here on the sideline while so many other people, meritorious people, are on the field trying to change the world for the better, trying to have the discussions, trying to defeat woo and magical thinking and dogma and corruption inside religious institutions, trying to make the world a better place, and they're dodging all this invective being thrown at them from people who are putting almost nothing on the line. There's no such thing as bad publicity for a great many of these people. In fact, I suspect for some of them, it's part of a strategy to latch on, to claw onto the coattails of much more prominent people in an attempt to ride their momentum into the spotlight. What is New Atheism? I'll tell you what it is. It's atheism. It's atheist activism, and it's been around, and it's been challenging religion and criticizing sacred cows and trying to help people for a hell of a lot longer than the lives and legacies of those who are being called the founders of New Atheism. Do not let people who are seeing this movement or the movements, don't let people with such poor focus, with such bad faith, with such bad ideas, frame what non-belief is and what atheist activism is, or try to reframe it. There is no new atheist. There are just atheists. Some good, some bad, some wonderful, some not so wonderful. Some passive, some active, some firebrands, some diplomats. You will find a huge spectrum of human beings who call themselves atheists, agnostics, non-believers, whatever. I heard a great saying once. It said, it's not what you're called, it's what you answer to. We don't have to answer to this new atheist brand that's being so clumsily flung about out there in the ether. It's a distraction. It's a red herring. It is a toxic pejorative that is distracting from the larger discussions, the larger criticisms, the necessary criticisms of really bad ideas. What is a new atheist? That is just another myth. Thank you so much for listening to the broadcast today. I'll see you next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.